That's your hear from me. I'm now handing over to George Monbiot. For those of you who haven't read Heat, you should do, although I believe things are even worse than it says in there. He's an author, so catch him in the newspapers too. And he can fully speak for himself, so I'm going to hand you over to him. George Monbiot.
Thanks very much, and thank you everybody for turning up on this filthy day. This is a taste of the dedication that we're going to need over the next few years. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to tell you about a discovery. It's a new technology concerned with carbon capture and storage, and it's causing a great deal of interest among environmentalists. It's cheap, it's efficient, and it requires no new technological breakthrough. And it can be deployed straight away. It is called leaving fossil fuels in the ground. Now on Wednesday, as the leaders, or so-called leaders of our nations, the pollutocracy, as I now call them, gathered in Bali to prevaricate over climate change, a group of us in some pretty filthy weather marched onto an open cast coal mine which is being built on the outskirts of Merthyr Tydfil, and we occupied the coal excavators. We brought the works at that pit to an end for the day. This one mine, the Fossafran mine, intends to extract 11 million tonnes of coal. 30 million tonnes of carbon dioxide that will produce equivalent to the sustainable emissions of nearly 60 million people. We had noticed something which all the wise heads of Bali had somehow overlooked, that when you dig fossil fuels out of the ground, they get used. And at the moment we have a government which is pursuing, or claims to be pursuing, two completely contrary policies. The first is to dissuade us by all possible means from using fossil fuels. Change our light bulbs, drive more efficient cars, turn the television off at the mains. The second is to encourage by all possible means the extraction of fossil fuels from the ground. Do they believe that these companies extract them as a hobby? The government has spent since 2000 £220 million on subsidising the extraction of coal in the United Kingdom. Just 2 days ago, just as the Bali talks began, the government gave the fossil fuel industry another big present in the form of a tax break for the oil companies operating in the North Sea. This was described by Angela Eagle, a minister in the Treasury, as the purpose being to ensure that no oil that can be removed will be left in the ground. Every barrel, ladies and gentlemen, every ton, every crumb, every drop that is taken out of the ground will be burnt. Every crumb, every drop, every barrel, every ton commits us to more carbon dioxide emissions and commits us eventually to runaway climate change. And any government which makes any pretense to seriousness in dealing with this problem will stop those fossil fuels from being extracted. But this government is not serious. In fact, no government at the moment is serious, because no government on earth has a supply side policy. It's all about managing demand. It's all about encouraging us not to use the fossil fuels once they've been taken out of the ground. There is no policy to discourage the supply of those fossil fuels, so no climate policy currently can possibly work. If the fossil fuels are extracted, they will be used. We have to stop that extraction. But this just touches on the notion that governments are not prepared, they are not even preparing to stop runaway climate change. They might nip and tuck a little bit in Bali, they might suggest the odd percentage cut here and there, but they're not grappling with the technological problem, the economic problem, the political problem, the philosophical problem, the moral problem of climate change. And it exceeds the scope of their thinking by several orders of magnitude. Let me give you an example of the challenge which we confront. Growth rates at the moment in the global economy are roughly 3.6% per year. That means that the level of economic activity worldwide doubles every 20 years or so. As a series of equations produced recently by Professor Rodney Smith at Imperial College show, a doubling in economic activity means, in effect, a doubling in resource use. Not a doubling in the resources used in the previous 20 years, no. A doubling in the resources used since humanity first stood on two legs. In other words, in 20 years, between now and 2027, at current rates of growth, we will use as many resources as humanity has ever used. By the end of this century, at current rates of growth, our expansion, our economic expansion, will have increased something like 18-fold over current levels. And that means, according to Professor Smith's calculations, an 18-fold increase in resource use, 18 times that which human beings have ever used. And this level of economic growth, according to our government, indeed according to all the world's governments, is called sustainable development. It is simply impossible to sustain. And we will see the biosphere go down, and then we will see ourselves go down in pursuit of this so-called sustainable development. But if you think that's difficult enough, let me just explain why we are currently committed to economic growth. And let me mention something which is very seldom mentioned on political platforms these days for fear of offending people profoundly, and this is the C word, capitalism. Let me try to explain this in very simple terms, because it is in fact a very simple problem. At the heart of capitalism is a practice of lending money at interest. You lend £100, you expect to get £105 back. That's what capitalism is all about. It's about using money to make more money. But if you get £105 back, you've done one of two things. The first is to increase the money supply by 5%. The second is to increase the velocity of transactions, in other words, the speed at which people spend, by 5%. One of those two things is necessary if you're increasing your payback from £100 to £105. Now, unless that growth in the money supply or the velocity of the use of money is matched by a concomitant growth in the supply of goods and services, then that 5% that you've just added to your intake of money becomes 5% inflation. The only way in which that growth in the money supply is not inflationary is if it is matched by a concomitant growth in the supply of goods and services. If that is not the case, the system collapses. This is why the Bank of England is established, to prevent inflation, and it prevents inflation by encouraging the supply of goods and services to match the supply of money. Capitalism, in other words, is inherently dedicated to a growth economy. You cannot, ladies and gentlemen, have green capitalism. It is a contradiction in terms. And you don't even have to take a political position to say that. You don't have to say that you're a socialist or a communist. You just have to understand that mathematically it cannot work. Yeah. So our challenge is not just to change our light bulbs and drive better cars or even ride our bicycles. It's not just to decarbonize our energy supply by 100%. It is to change our entire economic thinking and our entire economic system. And that requires, ladies and gentlemen, more than technical thinking, more than economic thinking, more than political thinking. It requires a profound ethical and philosophical shift which can only take place within our own hearts. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a revolution of the spirit. It is required as well as a revolution of our political systems. It is not going to happen in Bali. It is not going to take place in number 10 Downing Street. We are not going to hear Gordon Brown of his own volition standing up and saying, we must find an alternative to capitalism. It is going to start with us. I want to see you on that excavating equipment every week of the year. Yes, you and you. And I want to see you there as well. All of us have got to start taking direct action. We have to put our bodies on the line. We have to put our minds on the line. We have to put our hearts on the line. Because nothing other than a full 100% commitment with every cell in our bodies, with every breath we take, is going to carry out this transformation of our thinking and of our acting, which is required by the greatest challenge that humanity has ever faced. Only three questions are now worth asking of ourselves, and they are as follows. If not now, when? If not here, where? And if not us, who? Thank you.